ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
And this is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there. My name's Matt Brand. Welcome to the program. Donald Trump wants to bring down the cost of beef for Americans, but his plan is copping some serious backlash.
Government intervention like this, subsidizing foreign beef imports, is one of the most repulsive things that I've seen out of this administration, and I cannot believe it.
And what does all of this mean for Australia's cattle industry? I'll talk about this with you very soon. Also today, you'll find out why Geoscience Australia has been looking at rocks in Central Australia. And I'll be sharing with you today the results from one of Northern Australia's biggest bull sales. This is the Country Hour. We are broadcasting right across the territory on the ABC. G'day there if you've tuned in via the podcast. First up this afternoon, let's talk about the rain. When the rain comes down. Because it's been a wet weekend for parts of Central Australia, and the radar suggests there's still a bit of rain around this afternoon to the south of Alice Springs. Bit of moisture out on the Plenty Highway as well. If it is raining at your place today, let the rest of us know. Our text number is 0487 991057. But if we look at some of the rainfall totals just in the last 24 hours up to 9 o'clock this morning, there's some decent numbers here. So Alice Springs Airport's had 20 millimetres, Big Dipper 24, Bond Springs Cattle Station 21 in the gauge. Collier Creek's had 32, Fink River 13, Pine Hill Cattle Station 15, the Table Grape Farm up near Tea Tree, it's recorded 17, Wiggly Gorge 25. So these are decent falls. If we go east of Alice Springs, the manager at Amberlindum Station, Rick Morrison, he says they've had about 20 millimetres over 5 days, which is a great start to spring.
Yeah, really good, mate. We've sort of, from yesterday morning to this morning, we had 16 mil. Most of that was through the night. Yesterday was beautiful, clear blue skies. That, and then a little bit of rain at the end of last week. So, yeah, a bit over almost 20 mil now, sort of for the last 5 days.
You obviously got the aggregation out there with Amberlindum and Nummeri. Has it been pretty widespread across the station, or has it been localised in areas?
No, a bit patchy, mate. Like, Courts Hill's one of the outstations for Amberlindum. It's directly east of the Amberlindum house, and Nummeri's right down southeast, and it's down in the desert there. And Nummeri had the lion's share of it. Mainly, mate, they recorded 12 mil, and one day there where Courts Hill only sort of got 2.5, and then, we had about 6 here at Amberlindum. That was sort of in the last week.
We got some pretty impressive lightning displays and a bit wild when that rain came through last night here closer to Alice Springs. What was it like as it came over your way out there?
Oh, true. No, it was a bit more tame out here, mate. It was just like a nice, consistent, good grass growing rain, really. It just rolled and drizzled for most of the night, but no big storms or light shows or anything like that. No, it was pretty tame.
Obviously being a bit of a wet year, what does this rain mean for you there now, Amberlindum?
Mate, it's I've been through enough droughts personally that I don't ever reckon rain's too bad, and if it's in moderate amounts, I guess. But no, this is still great rain, I reckon. Like, really good start to spring. And I mean, we all, as everyone knows, in ag, and especially in the north, you only have so many dry days to get everything done that you need to get done. But certainly not nothing that's going to be a massive hindrance to the operation or anything like that. We're just about to get into sort of our second round here in aggregation, and it may push the start of that back a day or two, just from travel, try not to chop the roads up or put any wear and tear on vehicles that we don't have to. Other than that, mate, it's all good news, really.
I ran into one of your young ringers in town over the weekend who said you're heading out to stock camp this week, so it's potentially put a slight pause on that work beginning?
Potentially, mate. Yeah, no, the team's heading out to camp as planned was tomorrow, but it might just push that back a day or two or something like that. But yeah, I mean, it's ringers work in the rain as well, so they'll keep at it.
And with that second round of mustering about to begin, tell us a little bit about that and what you'll be doing as part of that second round.
Probably a bit more of a calf branding round too, but there's certainly second round weaners to come off, which obviously the calves we branded in the first round. Yeah, other than that, mate, it's just a wean wet and dry.
We're hearing a few stations, I guess, struggling to get some of their cattle off their station right now, just with how wet the roads are and getting trucks in and out. Are you looking at moving cattle, or is wet weather maybe having a bit of an impact on that as well?
Not too bad, mate. I moved some sow cattle earlier. I moved them on Saturday when I was going to originally do it tomorrow. I'm just watching the weather and the forecast and stuff. I decided to do it a bit earlier. But, no, we could work around it all way. It's, you know, weather's the one thing we can't control in ag anyway, so just work around it. And, yeah, and I just said I learned a long time ago never to complain about rain, so pretty new to the region, but talking to a lot of the locals, you know, this was one of the best years that they can remember. And as a corporate partial company manager, you're beholden to the weather a lot, but you can look like a great manager sometimes if it's a good season. So hopefully we made some of the right decisions and things off the back of it, but it's a lot easier to manage a cattle station when it rains. So it's a good year all round.
That's Rick Morrison, who's the manager at Amberlindum Station, speaking to Charles Geary. So they've had about 20 millimetres over 5 days. Things are looking the goods. I've got here 22 millimetres recorded at a Lambie cattle station, and that property's had 50 millimetres for the month of August. Again, this is good rain in the desert country. Our text number is 0487991057. Someone here reporting more rain at 2 a.m. out at Wagite. How about old Darwin Town? I woke up on Saturday morning, a bit bleary-eyed, walked outside. It took me a while to work out what on earth had happened. I thought something had gone wrong with the pool. But no, rain in old Darwin Town there. Early Saturday morning. And just looking at the radar this afternoon, yes, it would seem there's a bit of rain kicking around the Alice region, maybe a bit up along the Plenty Highway as well. If it is raining at your place, let us know. 0487991057.
Well, I'm Roger Steele, and I've been droving a heck of a lot, more times than I really wanted to. I've been with rushing cattle. I've been through the Murrinjay on 4 occasions. I enjoyed it so much I got into Parliament later to get away from the cattle. I was the Minister for Primary Industry on the very first occasion, and you're listening to The Country Hour.
It is 23-1. Donald Trump wants to bring down the cost of beef for Americans, but his plan is copping some serious backlash. And what could it mean for Australia's cattle industry? We'll talk about this in a moment. As you probably know, if you've been tuning into the Country Hour, it is the 100th anniversary of the Northern Australia Act, which in 1926 saw the Commonwealth split the territory into two separate territories. And they picked Newcastle Waters as the capital of North Australia. Ended up being a very short-lived experiment, that, and Newcastle Waters these days is a bit of a ghost town. Now, this story, this coverage by ABC Rural, it's up on our website this afternoon if you'd like to learn more. So head along to ABC Rural website, and there is the story by Tom Robinson. And of course, as part of this celebration, this special anniversary, Matt Scullion wrote the tune Mates of the Murrinjay. Here it is.
Of the Murrinjay.
Mates of the Murrinjay, Matt Scullion, that song written especially for this year's event, marking 100 years since the Northern Australia Act and the selection of Newcastle Waters to be the capital of North Australia. As I said, if you head along to our website right now, you can read this article. The headline is Mates of Ghost Town Newcastle Waters, once North Australia's capital, want it back on the map. On the text line this afternoon, got a message here from Helen out at Mount Rigg Station on the Plenty Highway. Helen's reporting they've had 11 millimetres over 2 days and has sent through some beautiful pictures. I love the one where you can see the mist on the ranges in the background and you can see some horses in the paddock. Helen, what I'm just loving is look at all the feed. Look at the greenery and just life is looking good. there at Mount Riddick. Thank you.
Do you want to hear a story?
For 30 years, Australian Story has been inspiring, revealing, compelling.
Don't just lean in, leap in.
Join Lee Sales to celebrate extraordinary moments.
Let's look back at the breadth and diversity of Australian Story.
With Claudia Carvin, Michael Klim, Alex Lloyd, Tim Minchin and more familiar faces.
This is nourishment for my soul.
Australian Story celebrates 30 years. Monday, August 31 on ABC TV and ABC iView.
US President Donald Trump says he has struck a deal to, and this is a quote, substantially lower the price of ground beef for working American families. Now, the president says the US will now allow up to 300,000 tons of ground beef to be imported with zero tariffs and a commitment that this beef will be sold at 25% below the current market price. I spoke earlier to meat analyst Simon Quilty, who says this plan lacks detail, and perhaps the only winner in all of this could be Brazil's cattle industry.
So, Matt, as of Friday, President Trump announced that there would be a 90-day waiver on out-of-quota tariffs for grinding meat going into America and 300,000 metric tons of it. So the idea being, Matt, that that influx would lower the value of ground beef in North America. I think that Brazil is the only winner out of this. And even then, it's probably questionable how much they'll put in. But of all the other import countries, whether it's Australia, Uruguay, Argentina, New Zealand, we're all sitting at about 70 to 75% of our allocation. And so there's really no upside for us or all those countries. It's really those that are currently out of access or paying the duty of 26.4%, which is Brazil and Japan.
Because Australian beef going into the US at the moment is going in tariff-free already, isn't it?
It is going in. You know, we're at about 75% of our allocation. And I would imagine at the pace we're going, Matt, that we would have been able to see the year out without any difficulty. So this reduction will have little to no influence on Australian beef value. What it does is, the concern is, lowers the overall price within the US market and therefore lowers Australia's beef export prices due to, you know, to the saturation of that lean meat market in America.
Mm. Under this deal, President Trump says this imported beef must be sold at 25% below the current market price. How's that going to happen?
That's a very good question. There is no detail given whatsoever, Matt. So it's difficult to know how they would monitor that and enforce it as well. What's interesting to note, Matt, is that the next 3 months is actually a low demand period in America. So I think they could have achieved this outcome without any need of touching or lowering tariffs.
I've got some audio here from the US Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke Rollins. This is her speaking to Fox Business and essentially blaming record high beef prices in America at the moment, blaming it on the former administration.
Listen, what we are facing in America today is the direct result of a war on cattle by the previous administration, frankly, a war on agriculture and a war on farming in general. When you've got a prior administration that is basically blaming cattle for their crazy climate agenda, then you have a real problem. And you also have, you combine that with, people are eating more beef today than ever before, which is actually really, really good news. Secretary Kennedy and I obviously have been working on new dietary guidelines. We have big announcements coming up on new school lunches. And eating real food is right in the middle of all of that. And so while we're working on combining all of this, ensuring that our ranchers have what they need to continue to rebuild their herds. But listen, here's the good news. For the first time since 2018, we're now seeing a turn where the cattle numbers are now moving back up. where ranchers are retaining their heifers, their mama cows, how they breed, their heifers, mm-hmm. are retaining at a higher rate than they have now in years. So I think the administration, President Trump's focus on our ranchers, on rural America, on rebuilding our food supply here continues to be a priority, and our ranchers are getting that message.
So that's the U.S. Secretary of Ag, Brooke Rollins. A lot in that piece of audio, Simon Quilty, but I did want to pick up on the comment. The Secretary says it's the first time since 2018 that cattle numbers in the US are moving back up. Does that match with the data you've seen about the herd?
Not really, Matt. I mean, it's pretty subdued, the situation. We saw in the latest inventory figures where there was a reduction in, you know, the cow numbers by about 2.5%, but the heifer numbers had increased. And so when you netted them out, overall female numbers were still down. So I don't agree with that. I also don't agree about, you know, saying that this was driven by the Biden administration, because they invested over $1 billion in processing capacity in America post-COVID. So I think on a number of fronts there, Matt, but the clear message from Friday's Cattle on Feed report is the supply is going to be extremely tight going forward. So all the indications are that the rebuild is still yet to really begin.
The National Cattlemen's Beef Association, which is sort of the peak lobby group over in the US for all things beef, it says no cow-calf producer in America is asking for increased imports, and that this is undercutting American farmers. How much pressure do you think this announcement by the president's going to come under from that US cattle industry?
I think it's enormous, Matt, and you just have to look across social media over the last 48 hours. And I think there's real truth to it, is that by lowering this tariff and having an influx of Brazilian beef, it is detrimental to overall cattle prices in America. And what they need is higher prices to incentivize retention of females, not lower prices. So the argument being is that this prolongs the problem by lowering tariffs, and therefore the rebuild takes longer. So I think there's a strong argument to say that in actual fact, this policy decision will achieve the opposite.
What's the weather doing in the US at the moment? Because surely that's going to play a big role in a herd rebuild.
That's true. And there is definitely drought continues across many parts of the US, though rain is expected. But Matt, you know, often with drought, you would expect that you would end up with additional supply. But as we say, you can only kill them once. And as a result, then, you know, even with this increase in dryness, we're still seeing very, very tight numbers. So when the rain comes, it's going to tighten the situation even more. And the forecasts are that there could be some good rains over the next 6 to 8 weeks. But nonetheless, dry conditions have existed in recent times across America.
That is Simon Quilty from Global AgriTrends, who tells me that about 55% of US cattle country is still in drought. As mentioned, US cattle producers are not happy with this plan by President Donald Trump. In a statement from the lobby group known as RCAF USA, it says increasing imports doubles down on a failed strategy that has substituted foreign beef for rebuilding domestic production. It says beef imports have already risen to record levels, while retail beef prices continue to climb and the US cattle herd continues to shrink. More imports has not resulted in lower beef costs for consumers. Meanwhile, former Republican and Trump loyalist Marjorie Taylor Greene has told her supporters that this policy is not America first. In fact, it's America last.
The latest thing the government is going to tell you, you have to accept, here it is. You're going to eat foreign ground beef and you're going to like it. And they're telling you that it's going to lower beef prices. That's about as America lasts as you can get. When the President of the United States is undercutting our own ranchers, our own beef farmers, Americans who are trying to raise their cattle under the smallest herds since 1951, trying to raise their cattle under a New World screwworm threat. And now they're having to compete against foreign countries who have been guaranteed by the president that it's 25% less than the market price. This is outrageous. You know, if you care about our country, then you care about our farmers and you care about our ranchers and you very much want them to be successful. But government intervention like this, subsidizing foreign beef imports, is one of the most repulsive things that I've seen out of this administration. And I cannot believe it.
Former Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene. Right now in Australia, I think it's fair to say that lamb prices are extremely high because we've seen, record sale yard prices for 12 months now. So if you want to go and buy a lamb cutlet at the moment in one of the major supermarkets, it's sitting at about $50 a kilo. Lamb's really expensive. But can you imagine if the Prime Minister came out this afternoon and said, I'm going to fix it by importing 300,000 tonnes of lamb from other nations and make sure that it's priced at 25% less than what's currently on the market? Sheep industry go off their rockers. And that is what we're seeing in the US, it would seem.
My name's Jess Daniels. I'm a biosecurity liaison with the Northern Territory Cattlemen's Association, and you're listening to Country Hour.
Just quickly to some other beefy news. One of Northern Australia's biggest bull sales was held on Friday. And it went well. The sale enjoyed a 100% clearance rate. I'm talking about the Fitzroy Crossing Bull Sale in the Kimberley, which this year celebrated its 20th anniversary. There were 120 bulls up for sale this year with an average price of just over $7,000, which was a good result for the vendors who trucked these bulls thousands of kilometres across from Queensland. Livestock agent Michael Longford said it was a great sale.
It was an excellent sale. The atmosphere was fantastic. And I think being the 20th year, bit of a milestone for it as well, which is also fantastic. All the bulls looked fantastic out and all the pens. And when they came in, obviously they sold extremely well.
And what was the average this year?
The average this year was just over $7,000 compared to last year, which was just over $5,300. So basically we're up $1,700 on this year's sale, which is absolutely fantastic.
Did the cost of freight affect numbers at all this year?
No, the numbers were back a little bit this year. That was their decision. It was only back, could have been back 10 to 15 head on last year. There's been no talk about cost of freight or anything coming over this way. The people that come over from Queensland with all their bulls, they generally are here on the Monday of start of the week and settle themselves in pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite a trek from Queensland. That's 3,000 something kilometres, I think. That's pretty significant. Why do you think they come all the way from Queensland to Fitzroy Crossing? Does it make financial sense for them still?
Obviously, must make fair financial sense for them to come across here. This was all started off by the breeders over in Western Australia and obviously Queensland. And they've been strong supporters ever since. They come here year after year. So, yeah, for 20 years, I reckon it's a pretty good effort by all those vendors from Queensland. There has been a few Western Australia studs that have turned up here as well over the years. But, they seem to come and go a little bit. But, yeah, generally, they're all from Queensland.
And in terms of buyers, who did you have at the sale today, as well as people online? Because there is that option to bid online as well.
Yes, yeah. So we have Auctions Plus here, which is really good. And there was a little bit of activity online. Unfortunately, this year, Auctions Plus didn't buy any bulls. The actual people that were bidding this year, very similar people turn up every year. And this year, the season's up this way has been reasonable again this year. That also helps along. But, yeah, they're just very strong on all the bulls this year. There's a lot of activity on the majority of the bulls and pretty fierce activity. Nice bidding, and they kept their auctioneer and our clerks very active, which is good.
That is Michael Longford, who's the Elders State Livestock Manager in WA, speaking to Jess Baker about the 20th annual Fitzroy Crossing bull sale. 120 bulls going under the hammer, 100% clearance rate, top price of $13,000. and an average of just over $7,000, which is a good result there in the heart of the Kimberley. Now, earlier on, I played the song Mates of the Murrinjay, and I've got a text here from Alex Nelson, who is a historian based in Alice Springs. And he's got a story to share with you this afternoon. He says, Matt, the reason why the Murrinjay stock route from Top Springs to Newcastle Waters was known as the Death Track is due to the prevalence of northern ironwood, highly toxic to all mammals that consume it. About 1960, botanist George Chippendale, with assistant Des Nelson, was tasked to survey a new stock route to try and avoid the ironwood, but this proved impossible. The trees were found in every single direction. The problem was solved a few years later, though, when road transport replaced the droving of cattle and the Murrinjay track was no longer needed, says Alex this afternoon. Our text is 0487991057. Alex, we always appreciate a good history lesson here at the Country Hour, and I'm hoping you and everyone else can stick around, because in our second half, you are going to meet a gentleman called Kerry Gibbs, who at just 14 years of age jumped into a Bedford truck back in 1966 to take supplies from Darwin down to Wave Hill. A famous journey. You'll hear from Kerry before 1:30 this afternoon. But now let's go to the newsroom, folks. It's 1 o'clock. I'll see you back here in 5 minutes' time for a chat with the Weather Bureau.
My name is James Gorry from TrainSafe NT. Just before you drive out bush, just do a quick inspection under your car or under the bonnet. So just keeping vehicles clean so we're not spreading biohazards, soil diseases or weeds. And enjoy listening to the Country Hour.
Matt Brown with you this afternoon. In a moment, you'll find out why Geoscience Australia has been checking out rocks in Central Australia. And I'll be giving you an update on H5 bird flu, which sadly now has spread to mammals. It's been found in two seals. I'll tell you more about this in a moment. Let's go to the Weather Bureau. Rebecca Patrick's there this afternoon. How are you, Beck?
Good, thank you, Matt.
It's been wet in parts of Central Australia. What are some of the best weekend totals for that sort of 72-hour period?
Yeah, that's right. So we have had a bit of a cloud band and also a trough move across the southern parts of the NT. Highest rainfall's been in the last 24 hours, but across the weekend, the winner is Collier Creek to the northwest of Alice Springs with 41 millimetres, so 32 of that fell at up to 9 a.m. this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Generally around the Alice Springs area, we did see sort of 15 to 25 in the last 24 hours. So in terms of that three-day rainfall, we've got Wiggly Gorge with 29, Bond Springs turn off with 30. So some decent rainfall there. Further west, rainfall wasn't quite as much. So we've got Pine Hill with 15 millimetres, Yallara with 8. And apart from that, up in the north, it's really just had a few little coastal showers. So early Saturday morning, a little bit around the Darwin area, pretty coastal there.
Did Fort Hill, I've got here Fort Hill Wharf at Darwin, 12 millimetres.
Yeah, it was a decent shower that went through mostly west of the airport. So the airport didn't actually get anything, but maybe if you're in the northern suburbs, you might not have got it, but certainly south of there and through the city and across Cox Peninsula as well, saw the showers move through.
Now, just looking at the Alice Springs radar, it would seem it's raining this afternoon at Tichikala, and perhaps there's a little bit of moisture out at Wataka National Park. What's the week ahead looking like in terms of rainfall?
Yeah, so today is probably when we're going to have the most action for the week. So we've still got that cloud band that extends south of Tennant Creek down to about Alice Springs and further east. So there's some light rain in that at the moment, but we also have a trough that's still back through the Lassiter district, and we're just starting to see some thunderstorms developing near that trough, as you mentioned, around Wataka and south of Alice Springs, just starting to fire up at the moment. Now, I should mention that there is a risk that we might have some of these storms develop into severe thunderstorms with potential for some damaging wind gusts. Mm. And there's also a slight risk of large hail or some heavier rainfall as well in those storms. So, yeah, keep an eye out in case there are warnings issued this afternoon.
Right. So just to repeat, potentially, where could we see hail?
So probably the more likely area is Alice Springs and south, and so that southern part of the Simpson District. But it is possible anywhere from probably the area south of Yindamu, Tea Tree, Jervois.
Right. Okay.
South of there, yeah.
There's a bit of fire to the east of Tennant Creek, south of the Barkly Highway as we go to air this afternoon. What are wind conditions like out there at the moment?
So at the moment we've got a northwesterly wind there. There is a weak trough just to their south, so that is something that we're keeping an eye on over the next day or so, because we are expecting those southeasterly winds to push through tomorrow. We've got a new ridge coming in, so something to be aware of, that there could be that change in wind direction. But at the moment, they're relatively light northwesterly winds through there.
I've got a text from Alex who says, Matt, at Pitchy Richie over the weekend, we got 26 millimetres, and that's on top of the 16 millimetres that we got the previous week. So 42 millimetres for the month of August so far. And he says, worth noting that the current El Nino may be the wettest on record for Australia. I saw an article about this on the weekend too. That was quite the headline, Rebecca Patrick. 2026 on track to become Australia's wettest El Nino year on record. Is that matching up with what's in front of you there at the Bureau?
I'm not sure. You'd have to talk to our climate.
Go to the climate department
for that one.
Well, I know there's a lot of primary producers that are very happy for it to keep raining like it is at the moment, because we're talking about Central Australia, but there's been darn good rain too in the southeast of this country as well, which is good for the croppers. Anything else that we need to be aware of about this week ahead?
I think that's the main things. Just if you're in the top end, we have had sort of lighter winds for the last couple of days, but we are expecting a surge to come through midweek, so around Wednesday, Thursday. So that's probably the only change up in the north.
Thanks for your time.
No worries. Thank you.
It is 12 past one and you are tuned into the Country Hour. Geoscience Australia has been on the hunt for silica and is getting a bit excited about what it's found in parts of the territory. I'll tell you more next.
Budging on the blind side.
Teachers have got to be explained to kids that every time you buy a scratcher, you're not going to win. There are some times when you don't win. Mm. And you can have a run that obviously in time will be offset by a winning streak.
Ryan HG.
You just have to wait.
You just got to wait.
And patience.
Patience.
And you treat the losses with the same degree of enthusiasm as you treat the wins.
That's right.
Ryan HG.
Saturday from 12 on ABC Listen.
Geoscience Australia has just released a new map showing where known deposits and potential deposits of high-grade silica can be found in this nation. The critical mineral is used in the manufacturing of solar panels, and there's a real push on to develop more silica projects and create a secure domestic supply chain. Dr. Christy Geeran from Geoscience Australia says the country around Hart's Range in the Northern Territory came back with some really promising results.
We were out for 2 weeks in the area and we just had the best time. It was so green. It was so beautiful. We collected, I think, about 100 different rocks from the area. It was really lovely. It was an area that we wanted to get to because we had previously, on an earlier draft of our map, identified it as an area that we felt had high potential, but that we didn't have any rocks from there already and that there was no known deposits in Hart's Range. So it was an area we really wanted to get out to kind of test our assumptions about our map. And we did find that, that was correct, that we did find some high purity samples from out in that area.
Interesting. Did it exceed expectations or was it pretty much exactly what you were expecting?
I always had high hopes for Hart's Range. I think we had a fairly good understanding about the key ingredients that we need to make high purity quartz, and we expected that Hart's Range would be quite promising just because you have all of the key ingredients out there. So that was really nice to confirm our hypothesis, I think.
And what about the purity of the silica that's there? How does it compare to other places?
We did find several places around Australia that had quite high purity silica. So I can't remember off the top of my head. I did rank the top 10 in my report, and I feel like Hart's Range could have been like 2 or 3. We also had some high purity samples returned from the Pilbara region in Western Australia and also from far north Queensland. So it's certainly not a needle in a haystack. There are many areas that are prospective. It's quite interesting. But I think finding high purity quartz is a little bit harder than people expected.
And could you just give us a bit of a summary of this report that you've prepared, which is mapping silica deposits across Australia?
Yeah, so we've just published a national scale mineral potential map for high purity silica in Australia. So mineral potential maps, basically a bunch of different ingredients that we combine. So it's a predictive tool that we can use to combining geology, geochemical data and geophysical data that kind of highlights areas that are most likely to host commodities of interest.
You were looking for silica or a specific type of silica this time. What can you tell us about that resource?
Silica is a really common compound. It's just silicon and oxygen, and the most common type of silica that we find is quartz, but not all quartz is really of interest. For the kind we're looking for, we call high purity silica, so that's kind of a quartz that has very little impurities in it, and that's important because we use it to make silicon, which is a critical mineral that we use to produce things like photovoltaic cells that go into solar panels and semiconductors.
And why was Geoscience Australia creating this map? Who's going to use it and what's the purpose of making it?
So the work was originally commissioned by the Critical Minerals Research and Development Hub. So as part of that project, one of the things that we delivered was the National Mineral Potential Map for High Purity Silica in Australia. And the idea of that map is to show areas of interest where high purity silica might be prospective. We can test the model that we generated in the map by comparing it to known deposits in Australia, and we found that our map identified 82% of the known deposits in Australia.
So you were kind of able to validate that your method of searching for silica works because it accurately kind of predicted ones you already know about. How about the ones that we don't know about?
So I wouldn't say we've identified any deposits. That's not entirely the purpose of the map. We're trying to identify areas where there's potential for deposits to exist.
Okay.
So it's more of a guideline for explorers to know where they should look rather than a tool to identify individual deposits. And the reason for that is largely because it's done at a national scale. So it's such a large scale and regional geology varies so much in Australia because it's so big. So our maps are giving you a kind of general idea about where to look, but specifically looking for deposits, that's up to the explorers with the boots on the ground who can actually look at the rocks in those areas.
We might see a kind of rush on looking for silica in the Northern Territory potentially.
I hope so. And we have definitely seen an increase in interest in exploration for high purity silica even since this project started. People are definitely hearing more about it and are more interested.
I guess, are there any other critical minerals that Geoscience Australia might be looking to hunt for or create a map of in the same way that it's done for silica?
Yeah, definitely. So the method that we use to make this map can be applied to any commodity of interest. So recently we've been working on rare earth elements, which are also quite important for various reasons. Mainly we make magnets out of rare earth elements.
What's the next critical mineral you're going to map?
The next mineral that we're mapping is not a critical mineral, and we'll be looking at copper, but it is one that's very interesting and very important to Australia. And then after that, I'm not 100% sure. We'll have to look and see.
Are there any that you want to look for?
I'm very excited about looking for cobalt.
Why is that?
I think cobalt's quite an interesting one. The market's very volatile. It's being dominated by the Democratic Republic of Congo, and it's got a lot of potential as a byproduct, which is, I think, something that I'm really passionate about. So that's looking at existing mines and deposits, and can we access additional materials from these mines that are already operating.
That's Dr. Christy Geeran from Geoscience Australia speaking to Sam Parry. This map showing known and potential deposits of high-grade silica. You can find that now via Geoscience Australia's website.
It's a Sunday tradition.
G'day, this is Macca. Welcome to the program wherever you are. Lovely to have your company, and what a lovely place to be at this time of the morning.
Australia all over with Macca.
Nice to talk to you, Daryl.
Thank you, Macca. It's good to speak. But as I say, we listen to you every Sunday morning, so I thought I'd give you a buzz.
The best way to do Sunday.
Listen to every one of your shows for over 30 years. I love your show.
Good on you. Thanks, Michael.
Australia all over with Macca from 5:30 on ABC Local Radio.
H5 bird flu has spread to Australian mammals with one confirmed case in a seal found dead at a beach in South Australia. And now there's another suspected case in a fur seal found at an important breeding ground near Kangaroo Island. The Invasive Species Council says sea lions could face an extinction level event if the virus takes hold in these populations. Minister for Environment Murray Watt spoke to ABC News Channel about this earlier on.
This is obviously a very serious development that we now have seen this strain of bird flu spread to a seal. So the first time in Australia we've seen it spread to a mammal. It is not unexpected. You might remember for several weeks now, my colleague Julie Collins and I have been warning that we are likely to see this kind of thing occur, and indeed that we are likely to see more mass mortalities, which is obviously a terrible thing for all Australians who love our nature. But what I can also say is it's something that we have been preparing for some time. Our government has invested about $113 million in preparedness for bird flu. And since we've seen it come to Australian shores, there's been another $24 million activated. And some of that funding has actually gone towards building up the resilience of populations of seals and sea lions by, for example, injecting baby seals and treating them for hookworm, which kills a lot of baby seals. So those kinds of things, what we've been doing over the last couple of years is about trying to build up larger populations of these mammals so that if we do have bird flu come and if it does kill some of them, we still have resilient populations for the future.
Just on that though, we saw about 75% of seal pups die on Heard Island when this bird flu arrived there. Is that the sort of mortality we're going to be looking at in our major seal and sea lion colonies around the country?
Yeah, look, I couldn't put a percentage on it, James, but as I say, we have been saying for some time that we are likely to see mass mortalities of birds and mammals, and I know that is a very distressing thing for Australians to hear, but we also need to be realistic. This is what we've seen happen overseas. Australia is very fortunate that we've been the last continent on Earth to have this strain of bird flu happen, but we are likely to see those kind of events as we have overseas.
Last hour we had BirdLife Australia on the program. They were saying that your government's not doing enough. We've heard from the similar things from the Invasive Species Council as well. What is going to be required in the coming months as birds come together and breed throughout the spring, spreading this virus? A lot of them are going to die in our wetlands, on our beaches, right? Like, what needs to be done to make sure that that can be cleaned up as quickly as possible?
Yeah, a couple of things there, James. I would make the point that we have increased our funding since bird flu came to our shores, and that indicates that our government, along with states and territories, is prepared to keep investing more as the situation escalates. And again, let's not forget the significant sums that have been invested to date. In terms of clean-up of carcasses, it's being managed by different states and territories in their own ways. We are providing funding to some states and territories to assist with that clean-up. In some cases, the biosecurity advice is that it is safer to leave dead animals where they are, but where it is appropriate to do so, to do that clean-up, that work is happening in many parts of the country as well.
That is the Federal Environment Minister Murray Watt speaking to James Glenday, and you can read more about this development in the spread of H5 bird flu via the ABC Rural website.
From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow.
It was a big weekend out at Kalkarindji with the community welcoming in a big crowd to celebrate the 60th anniversary of the Wave Hill Walk-Off. Now, among the visitors this year was Kerry Gibbs, who was just 14 years old when he jumped into a Bedford truck that was carrying supplies from Darwin down to the Indigenous stockmen on strike. Kerry shared his memories of that time.
My parents were committee members for the Northern Territory Land Rights Council. And they had a meeting and they made all the discussions and everything I knew that was going on. So I asked my dad, could I go? So we left Darwin. Obviously, if you know anything about the history of the Northern Territory, we couldn't stop anywhere because of fear of retribution for what we were about to do. Most people didn't know what was happening, but it became obvious as we came down the highway. So we went into Katherine, out of Katherine, camped at a place just the other side of Willaroo. We jumped out of the truck, broke off some branches and feather dusted all our tracks in because we were near Willaroo Station. So they did that. We went down to the hole, we camped, had a feed, had a good day. Good night's sleep, sorry. And then proceeded on the next morning. So hence, that's why we got here late at night. When we pulled in, they saw Brian driving. They didn't see me, and they didn't see Dexter until the last minute. And they called out, Kadia, Kadia, which is white man, and they were sick and tired of white men coming in, stockmen coming in at all hours of the night. So anyway, then Dexter yelled out, oi, you mob. Next minute they realised, hey, there's black fella, So they come over to the truck. You couldn't see a lot that night, but all I could see was smiling white faces, white teeth, white people faces, you know, happy, joyous to see us. We had flour, tea, beef, sugar, and they just never divvied it up that night, but the next morning they divvied it up so that everybody got something to eat. In realistic terms, had it have not been for that food, the station would have broken them. And that's the truth of the matter, and that's what the old man said, not my old man, Vincent said, that, you know, they probably had another couple of weeks and they were starting to panic because there's only so many fish in the billabong.
That is Kerry Gibbs speaking at Kalkarindji on the weekend, where people have been celebrating the 60th anniversary of the Wave Hill Walk-Off. A replica of that original Bedford truck. It was on show on the weekend at Kalkarindji during the reenactment of the walk-off. The original Bedford, Brian Manning's heritage-listed Bedford truck. It's on display these days in the National Museum of Australia.
Story of Vincent Langari. This is the story of something much more. Our power and privilege cannot move a people who
nowhere they stand, and they stand in their lawn. From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. From little things.
As we go to air this afternoon, it looks like it's pouring down rain at Tichacala. Still a bit of rain around parts of Central Australia this afternoon. And amazing how many locations picked up 20 millimetres of more just over the weekend period. That's it for today's country. If you missed any of our stories, it's all up on the podcast. Keep it rural.